Hey, finance folk. My name is Aidas Polubinskas, and today I get to talk with the chairperson of the European Banking Authority, the EBA, José Manuel Campa. He was first appointed to the chair of the EBA in March 2019 and was recently reappointed for a second term. He represents the authority, and by chairing the meetings of the Board of Supervisors and of the Management Board, he steers the strategic direction of the authority. Mr. Campa has some serious cred in academia, government, and the private sector. Banking, whether in the EU or anywhere else in the world, is a big deal. So I'm sure I've got something to learn from them. You can take that to the bank. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Campa.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Let's start with a basic question, basically as a refresher of the EBA. So what does the EBA do to make the EU's banking sector work for all of us who depend on it?
Well, thank you for the question, because I think it's very important that we explain ourselves to our stakeholders. So we basically do three main things. The first one is we, you know, write rules for how the banks work and operate within the European Union. And those rules are basically written with two goals in mind. One is try to foster a single market, the single market of the European Union, so there's a level playing field and there's the capability of providing services across the Union. And the second one is what we call the prudential rules, which is try to make sure that the rules are written in such a way that banks operate in a prudent manner. In a prudent manner basically means that they provide financial stability, they provide proper services to customers at the same time that they are providing those services in a way that both satisfies the needs of the customers and ensures other aspects of financial stability, which are important, such as prevention of fraud, prevention of crime and financing of terrorism and anti-money laundering, which is an area which we focus a lot. Also, safety and security in payments. As we introduce innovations in the payment systems, you know, we regulate to make sure that those payments are done in new ways, but at the same time, safe ways to guarantee that as I said before, that the provision to customers is good. Then beyond citizens, obviously, there's a lot that's done for firms, for corporates as well. And there, the key areas are obviously lending to those customers, providing other treasury-related activities and cash management activities, and providing also at the same time some services that had to do with more hedging the risk, covering the risk through financial products. That's, in essence, the role of the EBA.
Okay, thank you. You are an old hand at the EBA. In fact, you've just been reappointed for your second term as the chairman of the EBA. Big vote of confidence, obviously. What are you looking forward to accomplishing most over the next 5 years?
Yeah, thanks. It's really an honor to be able to continue to serve for another 5 years. And in terms of what's in our agenda, I think that, you know, if I may split into like four different groups, four large groups. The first one, as I said before, is continuing to build the single rule book, the common rules for the European banking sector in the prudential aspect. That's what we call the implementation of Basel III agreement within the jargon of the banking sector. Also the implementation of the CRR through the Capital Requirements Regulation and Capital Requirements Directive that were just approved by the co-legislators in the European Union. That implies for us the development of second level legislation. We have over 100 mandates to work on that. We put forward a roadmap that will execute on those mandates over the next 3 or 4 years. So that basically, as you can imagine, that's a big chunk of the next 5 year horizon. The second aspect in which we will be working on is on implementation of technology in the industry and the implications that that has for providing stable services across the industry. That has two concrete aspects early on in the next 2 years of the mandate, which is the implementation of the Digital Operational Resilience Act, which basically ensures that there's operational resilience as financial service firms are subcontracting products, particularly the provision of information-related technologies, cloud services, things of that sort, you know, to make sure that the system remains resilient. The second piece of legislation is the market in crypto assets regulation. Now, that's an area in which, as we evolved, in technology in the European Union. You know, we're regulating the provision of e-money services and what's the so-called stable currencies within the crypto world. We are responsible for putting in second level legislation at the same time that we're responsible also for coordinating the supervision and actually doing direct supervision of those issuers of those stable currencies that become significant or critical at the European level. The third big area of work is on sustainability-related issues. You know, we have, as the European Union, a strong agenda on ESG-related aspects, mainly on climate early on, but not only. And as you can imagine, within the financial sector, within the banking sector, there's also a lot of work that needs to be done there. That work involves enhancing the regulatory framework, making sure that the banks have good modeling and risk management and metrics of how to assess those risks. From our side, also doing making sure that we provide guidance on how to do proper stress testing of those risks and do, and for ourselves as well, to do stress tests of the system as a whole. So, for instance, now we're jointly with the other two supervisory authorities in the financial sector, ESMA and EIOPA, for in the security sector and for the insurance sector, we're doing a joint stress test of the financial sector of the European Union, not just banks, not just insurance, but all the financial sector as a whole and the resilience of the sector to provide adequate financing and financial stability through the accomplishment of the Fit for 55 strategy of the European Union with a horizon of 2030. You know, that's a stress test that we're doing that we'll be publishing the results at the beginning of next year. The fourth large area, and this is an area in transition in the regulatory framework within the European Union, is the area of anti-money laundering and terrorism financing. Here I say it's an area in transition because, as you may be aware, and listeners may be aware as well, the European Union approved a new regulation, a new regulatory framework on AML, and with a part of that package, there's also the creation of a new authority, AML authority at the European Union, that will do direct supervision of AML concerns at the European level. That new authority will start working full steam in the fall of next year. And we are currently the ones that are executing those mandates at the European level. So it's our duty to transfer those mandates and those obligations to the new authority, while at the same time to facilitate and make sure that the new authority starts running at full speed as soon as possible. And on top of that, also, we will, after that, we'll continue to collaborate with them to make sure that we have a homogeneous and coordinated management of supervisory activities across the financial sector.
Mm-hmm. We recently did a podcast on AMLA, on the Anti-Money Laundering Agency. So I'm going to put a note in the show notes, a link to that, so that people can, you know, tie it into what you just said.
Very good.
I want to go a little deeper on maybe two subjects, because you mentioned digital financiers, cyber, and sustainability. So what does the future look like when it comes to cybersecurity specifically and the green transition? Those are obviously two really big talking points right now. So I'm very interested in hearing what you have to say about that.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. No, I mean, when we think about cybersecurity, I always distinguish between two aspects. You know, one is what we call cyber resilience, another one, which is cybersecurity and cyber threats. What do I mean by that? Cyber resilience is basically we need to make sure as more and more technology is being introduced in the management of financial services, but also, of course, the management of society overall. But from my perspective, obviously, financial services is the core of our business. You know, we need to make sure that the system remains resilient, you know, that as people engage in subcontracting activities, as engage in new ways of doing the ways they're doing in the digital world, being with either just pure cyber aspects, or also introducing new methods of being linked to artificial intelligence, machine learning, or other processes, that the system remains resilient. Here, as I mentioned before, we already have a piece of legislation in place in the European Union, which is the Digital Operational Resilience Act.
DORA.
The DORA, yeah. Exactly. Where the goal there of that regulation is precisely to ensure that the system remains resilient, you know, to ensure that we're going to do direct oversight of those providers of those services to financial services firms, you know, so to make sure that the whole value chain from the beginning of the production of the process until the delivery to the customer is resilient, and the critical functions in the financial sector remain robust to any possible disruptions. This is important because as the subcontracting was starting to take place, what we observe is basically that First, individual financial firms had more and more difficulty to engage with the subcontractors that were becoming very powerful in the terms, the detailed terms in the service had to be provided to them, and that was difficult to them. At the same time, it's also true that there was concentration of risks in a few providers, which have become very large, mm-hmm. and that they provide services across all financial firms in the system. So it's important to manage that concentration of risk. So that's about cyber resilience. Mm-hmm. The other part, of course, is cybersecurity and cyber threats. And that, I would say, you know, when we think about financial supervisors and they think about the risk map and what are the key risks that they see in the horizon, this is clearly one of the risks that are very high in any risk map for a financial supervisor. Even more, in the current context of geopolitical tension.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because we do know that a significant amount of cyber attacks sometimes come from official sources. You know, so here we are enhancing our capabilities. The ECB itself actually is running right now an stress test on the banks that they directly supervise on cyber resilience. You know, we do know from ENISA as well that the number of cyber attacks have been increasing over the last 2 or 3 years. But we do know at the same time that the impact of those cyber attacks so far in the financial sector have been limited. So, you know, banks so far have not suffering on the financial sector overall significantly, significant disruptions. They have suffered some, but not significant disruptions as a result of those cyber attacks. The second part is really good news. You know, of course, I always said that our goal is to make sure that those good news comes because we're really good prepared. Well prepared to manage those attacks. It's not that we've been lucky so far in how those attacks have developed. So that's a word that will continue. The second big area that you mentioned is sustainability and the ESG agenda, green transition. That's very important. Here, you know, we're working from the bank's point of view in all the assessment of the bank's engagement in their activities. You know, that involves starting with their governance processes and their monitoring of risks. So we put forward already guidelines or recommendations on ESG governance, how the bank should govern the ESG risk. Then it also involves in making sure they develop better information, better disclosure, and better metrics and models to be able to manage that risk. So we put forward already requirements for banks on what we call Pillar 3 requirements, which are disclosure requirements. And we ask them to provide information on the size of their positions, the exposure to green assets or not. And also now we're working on them on how to, they're going to be putting forward what we call their transition plans, their potential transition plans, how they expect that the transition will affect them, how are they going to manage that transition, and as a result of that, what is the implication for their prudential management going forward. That's under what we call the central scenario. At the same time, we need to work also on potential stress scenarios that I mentioned before. We need to make sure that not only we are able to manage a transition in a smooth process, but also that we are robust to potential shocks that may come along the way. So we're developing techniques on how to do a stress testing in the financial sector for ESG-related issues. When I talk about ESG, honestly, we're really mainly talking about E, and with E, environmental, about climate at this stage. You know, but as we go forward and in the next 5 years agenda, there's clearly other areas, particularly in social. We're already introducing some metrics that need to be monitored in the social aspect. For instance, we've been poked with a lot of us right now on diversity. That's one of the issues. Pay gap, another issue that has to be addressed. And they're already, banks are already required to report on those issues on a regular basis, and we monitor that. But I expect that agenda to grow as well in the future.
Wow. You certainly have your hands full, and I'm just going to say the next 5 years seem to be very busy for you. So I'm not surprised that they're staying with the guy who's been at the helm for 5 years prior, and have the confidence that you're going to keep on doing all this hard work. Chairperson Campa, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. I really appreciated it.
Thank you so much for your attention and for your interest and for the invitation. It was a pleasure.
Okay, here's my take on this. The EBA's mission is to contribute to the stability and effectiveness of the European financial system through simple, consistent, transparent, fair regulation and supervision that benefits all EU citizens. They contribute to the creation of the European Single Rulebook in Banking, through the development of technical standards and guidelines. The single rule book aims at providing a single set of harmonized prudential rules for financial institutions throughout the EU, helping create a level playing field and providing high protection to depositors, investors, and consumers. That's all a fancy way of saying that they are there to create an efficient, transparent, and stable single market in EU banking products. That sounds like they're making banking boring. Yeah, but boring in a good, stable, and safe way. None of us want adventure in banking. Adventure is best left to sports and to travel. That's it for today. Thank you for joining me. Do please tell others about the podcast, like and subscribe. Give us a good rating on whatever platform you're listening on. It helps spread the word. Bye.